Yes, death is, as we were talking about today, it is a process of reconstitution. So the reason why you don't want to like avoid death and become a cyborg or try to use gene modification to live forever is that we actually need the death process. Our soul actually becomes weary. We're not designed to live forever in the material world, and the soul and the consciousness will actually become insane. It'll go crazy if it lives too long, because the I, the individuality, it operates in a rhythm, and we're not designed to live outside of that rhythm. So we are to operate within the rhythm of life and cosmos itself. And so we're, our astral body, our etheric body, they're not suited to live for a longer period than we currently have, certainly not by artificial means. What will happen is that the individual who is trying to do that will go insane. They'll actually go crazy, because even though you may be able to have the body live on, the physical organs and whatever, the spiritual aspects will deteriorate because they're part of the cosmos. We're essentially borrowing them, right? The thing that we get to really keep is our eye at the end. And so, there is a need in that sense for death from the perspective that we need that renewal. We need that rebirth. We don't choose. We cannot choose when we die, right? That gets into the taking of life conversation we had at the top of this session. So we don't get to choose when that is, because we enter the rhythm of life and we are born and we die according to a rhythm much greater than our mind can understand. So we don't play God. We operate within the parameters of God. Try to understand God through our experiences. And through that, we know ourself. So death provides the ability for reconciliation with the spiritual world, with angels, but also reconciliation with our deceased loved ones. So when we pass away, we do get to see family members, friends, individuals who passed before us. So there is a period of beautiful reconciliation. We get to be with angels. We get to see spiritual masters, humans that are exalted. And so the world of death is really, I mean, once we can get through the kind of Kamaloka experience, the burning desert of thirst, we begin learning, we begin to heal, we get to see people that we haven't seen for maybe decades. And so there's this whole aspect of heaven that's healing for us. We get reoriented and we learn and we get a different vantage point from heaven of life. And then when we come back around again, we hope that we can become quiet enough and still enough and tranquil enough to sense that heaven within ourselves that we learned from our last passage through it. We hope that we can bring that to the forefront more and more each life and live a more and more spiritually aware life. That's the hope. And so, like, if you're not getting that, then you're not getting that reorientation back in the spiritual world. And again, you will go crazy. Like the I, the astral body, the etheric body, when they're done, the body dies. When that higher self has decided that the mission is complete, the individual passes away. So this holding of the I and the etheric body and the astral body hostage is really, quite frankly, demonic. So we do need that death process. We don't want to rush there. We don't want to worship that process. We don't want to speed it along. But we also have to recognize it as a rebirth into higher worlds, which, when it does happen for us, should be an outbreath of grace and release. and we live every day knowing that we are either building something eternal within us that will be glorified upon our death and made greater upon our death, or we're weighing ourselves down, we're slowing our process of learning, we are in a sense halted by too much material interest, too much focus on the material life that starves us in the spiritual world. Literally starves us, makes us forever thirsty, burns us in the spiritual world. Too much of a material life equals burning and dismemberment in the spiritual world. You know, not great. What happens to black magi who repents before death? Anytime a person genuinely repents, and when I mean repent, I mean, first of all, you understand the pain that you may have caused someone, and you deeply see it as being wrong, and there's a genuine desire to reconcile that and atone that. That's what real repentance and atonement is. It actually has to be something very real within you. It can't just be like, oh, I think I did something wrong, I'm sorry. Like, it has to be you truly feel it. If that happens, and the moment that happens, I don't care how dark you are, you will be surrounded by angels, you will be surrounded by the Christ, and you will be presented a path into the higher worlds. This idea of like eternal punishment and eternal damnation and retribution, and that is a human perspective. The moment that somebody looks inward and says, I have wronged myself, I've wronged people, I have done bad things, the moment that that happens in a genuine way is the moment that God is with you, and is the moment that Christ is with you, is the moment that angels surround you and begin to saturate you with the forces that raise you to who you truly are. When you're not mired in selfishness and materiality. The moment that someone begins to get beyond that is the moment an angel is there. That is the biggest joy of the spiritual world, is actually to see someone who has been on the path of selfishness, who has been on the path of cruelty, of intense materiality, and to see that person just begin to turn inward, just begin to turn on it. I can tell you it is the most glorious and celebrated thing in the spiritual world. There is no thought of like, well, you're going to suffer now, or you're going to get karma, or you're going to, I hope that you burn in the baboon hellfires of the Book of the Gates and the Egyptian tradition. There is not that in the spiritual plane. The angels, Christ, they understand what we are going through deeply. On some level, they've been there themselves to be in that position. So the moment that someone turns inward and someone turns on is considered to be a holy event in the spiritual kingdoms. It is not a time of evil and retribution on their part. It is a time in which these people are very gently from the spiritual plane trying to be reoriented and have all those demonic entities cast out over time. Through the individual taking more responsibility, probably making some sacrifices, and that process can begin. But that is a holy process. Okay, that is a holy process when someone comes to that genuine understanding. They should not be punished when they begin that process. Do you know what I'm saying? They shouldn't be, you know, they should be met with compassion, right? That's when it's a genuine, genuine change. What else is going to work? We're just going to perpetuate the evil by never approaching them with love, just perpetually punish? No, it's a holy thing when somebody comes to God within them. Organic portals traumatized upon death. There's a period, like if somebody has been horribly traumatized on death, there is a lot of help from angels and from the spiritual world to bring harmony and balance. Again, even Kamaloka and these rather gruesome descriptions we were talking about, dismemberment and burning, this is really about equilibrium. It's not judgment. It's not karma. It's just about equilibrium. And so sometimes when you have people who have been really horribly abused and really traumatized, or even sometimes people who pass away when they're very high on drugs or alcohol, there's a special sort of process that they go through, which is a kind of reorientation into a kind of clarity, and then they can go with their death process. So all of that is taken into account by these beautiful, glorious beings. There's angels there. And there are obviously people that have lived human lives that are assisting. It's a beautiful, the spiritual world is a beautiful place. And a lot of it is dedicated to us, to getting us on the right track, to produce the wheat, to produce spiritual forces that enter into their kingdom of life, right? What happens to souls who sacrifice themselves who were once evil? Well, again, any type of turning towards God, towards Christ, is accepted with open arms if it is genuine. Obviously, spiritual beings know when it's not. They live in the world of mind, so it's very obvious when it's not. You're not going to trick them. And so, if you live a truly evil life, you will experience all of the dimensions very vividly of your evilness. I remember in Rudolf Steiner's lectures on the death process, he takes a moment and he says, you know, those people who basically do vivisection or dissect animals live will experience the most excruciating kamaloka you can imagine, because obviously they're going to have to experience all of the cruelty by trying to operate on living beings and stuff like that. So if you're an incredibly cruel person, whether it be, you know, operating on people or animals while they're alive, which is absolutely horrible, or whether it be a black magician who is repeatedly trying to curse people, trying to hurt people, you will experience all of that in your death. All of the black magic you try to inflict on people with different attacks or inflict on the world with your darkness, you will experience upon your death. That's the equilibrium that is Kamaloka, and that is death, that is the heavenly process. And this is why some people get so addicted to the material world, is because in a sense, there's a kind of power that can be gained in the material world only. It just doesn't exist in the spiritual plane. You know, because the more deeper you go into the levels of heaven, the more it just becomes so obvious that we are one. We're individuals. We have an I, an individuality, but we're also all one. And so what I do to you, I do to myself. What I do to myself, I do to you. That becomes so obvious the more you incarnate, the more you evolve. And so there just is, eventually, there just is no desire for evil. Like when you live enough lives and you become conscious, I should say, it's not necessarily the amount of lives that you live, but you just eventually begin to associate, once you understand that death experience, you begin to be like, you know what? I'm not going to be a really cruel person because I remember and I know that that's just going to come back on me. And not even like an avoidant thing, but just is very obvious to you. You're not going to get trapped in material pleasures because you just know that it's just not going to amount to anything in the way longer period of existence you're going to have in heaven compared to the one on earth. Like once you get to a certain point of development, a lot of the material things and dark, evil things, it just don't make sense to you. It just doesn't make sense. It's just like, why would you do that? It's not even like a judgment. It's just that like you're very lost and confused. You don't understand reality. That's what it becomes like when you compare it to somebody who is doing all of this evil in the world and trying to consolidate all the power they can to rule the material world. It is but a blink of an eye, and then you are dismembered in the Kala Sutra and measured by a black string, and your larger parts are made small, your smaller parts are made large. It really does affect you. The death process does affect your spirit, your being. And so that's why I think evil people, as you're mentioning here, that's why I think they avoid it, is because I think deep down, once you start engaging in evil, and the sad thing about the lower appetites as well is that the more you engage in them, the more you want them. It's kind of like you descend into a lower world within a world, and suddenly everything you see has to do with that kind of lower urge. And you descend deeper and deeper into sort of these lower urges, and everything sort of becomes more and more around them. And you descend into like a different consciousness through the lower centers. And part of that is, I think, that evil people will seek to live forever because subconsciously they fear death, because they fear Kamaloka. They fear that which they know exists because their soul has probably experienced it before.